Now, last time we looked at some of chapter 8 and most of chapter 9. Do you remember what Solomon said? He said, our life is framed, if you like, by two bookends. Bookend number one, God is unknowable. There may be a God, maybe there isn't a God. If there is, you can't know him. Bookend number two, death is the end. And what lies between those two is your life and mine. Those are the two certainties which most people go along with in the UK today. They say God is far away, God is unknowable, death is the end. That being so, what are we going to do with the in-between? How am I to live? What is the life that's worth living? Well, Sir Solomon, this is all by way of reminder, but last week, since death ultimately robs life of all meaning, and since therefore death robs you of everything you've ever lived for, then it makes no difference how you live, does it? And there's no point looking for answers. And since God is unknowable, seeking to please him is a waste of time. And since life is short and life is unfair, and that the only day that you can guarantee is today, well then, enjoy today to the full. Chapter 8, verse 15, so I commended enjoyment, because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life which God gives him under the sun. So Solomon, just be thankful you're alive. Make hay while the sun shines. And since there's no love or parting beyond the grave, then love and party now. Chapter 9, verse 8, let your garments always be white and let your head lack no oil. Live joyfully with a wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which is given you under the sun, all your days of vanity. For that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. Ultimately, your life is meaningless. So who cares what you do? Just do it. Get on with it. Do it today, because today is the only day you've got to do it. Verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. So Solomon's message last week was, eat, drink, and be merry. What did you think of Solomon's message? What do you think of his conclusion? Are you happy with it? For Solomon, sometimes I get bored and lonely and sad. I can't just eat, drink, and be merry. And aren't you confusing pleasure with satisfaction? We've never had more pleasure, but never been less satisfied. Solomon, I can't believe you really say this. Eat, drink, and be merry. It's hollow. It doesn't ring true. It sounds like we're distracting ourselves. It sounds like we're avoiding the issue. We're all playing pretend. That actually our lives are boring and we don't know what to do. So, well, let's eat, drink, and be merry. Solomon, it doesn't work. Really, says Solomon, chapter 10? Well, in which case, then, you'll just have to make do. And that's the theme, that's the message of chapter 10. Making do, making the best of it. So please have chapter 10 open in front of you, it's page 594. And Solomon has six things to say. And number one, is better wisdom than folly. That's the first four verses. Verse 1, dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odour. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honour. Okay, it's dropped into the English language, isn't it? A fly in the ointment. In the ancient East, the perfumer's ointment was highly prized, sort of life-enhancing aromatherapy. But all it takes is just one fly to ruin it. Suppose tonight you get your cup of tea after the service, and there floating in your tea is a fly. Well, it's no good saying, well, it's fine, it's still 99% tea. You'll be all right. So you just the little destroys the whole. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honour. To ruin a hard-won reputation, all it takes is a moment of madness, a single indiscretion, a solitary lapse, and our wise man's name will forever be associated with a bad smell. Think of Sir Malcolm Rifkin, former Foreign Secretary, Chairman of Parliament's Intelligence and Security Committee. A safe pair of hands, an honourable man, a politician respected by all for his judgment. But he's had to stand down as chairman of the committee. And he's announced that he won't be standing as an MP for the safe seat of Kensington. He's stepping down as an MP after what he described as making errors of judgment in a cash for access scandal. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odour. So does a little folly, an error of judgment, as he put it, to one respected for wisdom and honour. And his career is over. Well, look at verse 2. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. Well, what does that mean? Well, when the Bible speaks about the heart, it means the real you. And in the Bible, the right hand is associated with blessing and honour, and the left hand with cursing and dishonour. So what Solomon is saying is, he's saying the wise man always inclines to what is good and honourable. And the fool always inclines to what is bad and dishonourable. If you like, the fool's got a wonky wheel on his trolley. There's a bias that always moves him to the left. Can't stop himself from making stupid choices. If you like, when he's throwing the ball, he can't catch it with his right hand. He tries to catch it with his left and, of course, therefore drops the ball. Better to be wise than foolish. Verse 3, even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom and he shows everyone that he's a fool. So suddenly you just can't hide a fool. His whole manner and bearing, even he's just walking along the street, tells you he's a fool. Proverbs says the only way a fool can disguise himself is by keeping quiet. Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he is considered perceptive. But then, of course, as soon as he opens his mouth, he gives himself away. Now, one way you can spot a fool is by the way he reacts to rough treatment. So verse 4, if the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, or don't leave your seat. Solomon is saying, look, don't jump to your feet and say, how dare you speak to me like that. Be wise. Think before you act. Stay in your seat. Don't be too quick. Rather be gentle, gracious, conciliatory. Don't aggravate the situation. Be a peacemaker. A healer. For conciliation pacifies great offences. So says Solomon, in making do of life, how are you going to make do of life? Well, be wise. Because wisdom is sort of, it lubricates the wheels. It softens the blows. Wisdom is the way to honour and blessing and recognition and to being somebody. And that at least is something, isn't it? Better wisdom than folly. Okay, point number two, observation number two of Solomon. He says the world's upside down. Verses 5-7. There is an evil I have seen under the sun, as an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a lowly place. I've seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants. See what Solomon's getting at. In spite of what he said about fools, he actually says, well, I know what I've just said about fools, but actually often we find fools in positions of authority and influence. After all, Solomon said the previous chapter, chapter 9, verse 11, time and chance happen to all. So sometimes those who can't do, and those who can, don't. And you find the ill-equipped take the best jobs, and those who are the best qualified take the lowest jobs. So sometimes you find the fools are on the throne, and the wise are at the gate. I've seen servants on horses while princes walk on the ground like servants. The world's upside down. It's the wrong people who get lucky. And the right people, well, often they're the unlucky ones. So the Emperor Caligula had his horse elected to the Senate in Rome. I'm sure his horse did a lot less damage than Caligula. He was a monster, wasn't he? Had he come to rule over this vast empire? Or President Mobutu ruled Zaire for 32 years. This is how he titled himself. I hope I get it right. Mobutu Sese Seko Kiko Umbendo Wazabanga. Which means the all-powerful warrior who, because of his endurance and inflexible will to win, will go from conquest to conquest, leaving fire in his wake. So if you're going to give yourself a title, you know what to do. Well, he certainly left fire in his wake, having embezzled literally hundreds of millions from Zaire's fabulous mineral wealth. He bequeathed to his country anarchy and civil war. How did he get into a position of power? The world's on its head, isn't it? It's the fool who's ruling. The lunatics, they take over the asylum. The world's upside down. But, says Solomon, there it is. That's just the way it is. You'll have to make do. You'll have to make the best of it. So point number three. Nothing works, verses 8 to 11. In this world, things always go wrong. Look at verse 8. He who digs a pit will fall into it. Now, it's not poetic justice. He's not saying, look, he who digs a pit to catch somebody else out is going to fall into it himself. All Solomon is saying is, look, accidents happen. You may have seen the headlines a while back about a farmer who fell into his own slurry pit and drowned. Verse 8, whoever breaks through a wall will be bitten by a serpent, bitten by a snake. Some jobs need brute force. Okay, demolition men, they don't tackle walls gently, do they? Which, of course, is when there's all the sweat and fury, as they're breaking down the wall, they fail to see the snake that bites them. Verse 9, he who quarries stones may be hurt by them. You're a quarryman, that's your job. There you are, you're faced with a great lump of rock. Well, you can't pussyfoot around, can you, with a big lump of rock? You can't go with a little hammer and go tap, tap, tap. You've got to put your back into it. But, of course, when you do, bits of rock fly off in every direction like shrapnel, and you get hurt. The job carries the danger. If you're going to be a quarryman, you're going to get hurt. Verse 9, and he who splits wood may be endangered by it. My grandfather lost about 6 teeth chopping wood. A bit of wood flew off, knocked him in the choppers, and they came out. But it's got to be done, isn't it? Someone's got to chop the wood. Verse 10, if the axe is dull and one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength. But wisdom brings success. You've got a blunt axe. What does it mean? Well, you have to work even harder because the axe is blunt. But if you actually stop and think about it before you go charging in, you think, this is wearing me out. I've got a blunt axe. What I'll do, I'll sharpen the axe. And if I sharpen the axe, that requires less effort. It'll go through the wood more cleanly, so less haste, more speed. Verse 10. But then, says Solomon, it's not always like that. Look at verse 11. Now, the New King James Version is not a very good translation. Verse 11, the ESV catches it much better. It's what the ESV says. If the serpent bites before it is charmed, there is no advantage to the charmer. He's comparing verses 10 and 11. You see what Solomon is saying, his point. In verse 10 he says, stop, think, take your time, don't rush in. Just make sure the axe is sharp before you start your job. Less haste, more speed. But then he says, verse 11, the opposite is true. Because if you're charming a snake, what do you need for charming a snake? You need quick reactions. And if you don't react quickly, if you don't get charming, you'll get bitten. If you're charming a snake, you can't take your time, can you? Because it'll bite you. So one job requires you to stop, think, take your time. Here's another job. You can't stop and think and take your time. In other words, he's saying that in life, wherever you go, there's frustration built into it. There's danger. There's difficulty. These things are just built into everyday life. And whatever you do, something always goes wrong. Nothing works. It's your job to quarry stone, then you get injured by it. It's your job to chop wood, and when you do, you get injured by it. And so it goes on. It just seems to be built into the system. Nothing works. But, says Solomon, you'll just have to make do, won't you? That's the way it is. He makes a fourth observation. Stuck in the middle with you. Verses 12 to 15. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you. Who are you stuck in the middle with? Look at verse 12. For the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious. Fine, I don't mind being stuck with a gracious wise man, but the lips of a fool, the lips of a fool, being stuck with a fool. The lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness and end. The end of his talk is raving madness. A fool also multiplies words. No man knows what is to be. Who can tell what will be after him? You ever been stuck with a fool? Stuck with a pub bore? Or the person just doesn't know when to stop, and it's like you're sort of caught in a continuous loop, and it just goes round and round, and after a while you've lost the will to live, haven't you? And then that person who's got an opinion on everything, and they lay down the law, and they tell you what will be, and what they think, and how it's going to turn out, and on they go. Says Solomon, verse 14, a fool multiplies words. No man knows what is to be. That person who stands up and says, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen, how does he know? If he talks like that, he's a fool. Who can tell what will be after him? You've been stuck with those sorts of people? Says Solomon, you've been stuck with a fool. Stuck in the middle with you. And of course, the great irony of fools is for all their words, they haven't got a clue about anything. They're so wrapped up in themselves that they can't see anyone or anything else, verse 15. The labor of fools wearies them, for they don't even know how to go to the city. Because fools never listen to anybody else, they never listen to any advice. Because they're so sure of themselves, because all they're interested in is them and their little world, because it's all about me, me, me. Well, they stumble through life and they make things harder for the rest of us. Therefore, they don't even know how to go to the city, as someone put it. They can get lost on an escalator. You ever been stuck with fools? Oh, stuck in the middle with you. Says Solomon, you'll just have to make the best of it. So observation number five, or point number five, politicians. How many days to the election? I know one person knows. 59. And it was on the tip of all your tongues. 59 days to the election. Well, look at verse 16. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child. And your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles, and your princes feast at the proper time, for strength and not for drunkenness. So who's going to be in power after May the 7th? Well, Sir Solomon, pray that it's not a child. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child. Now, it doesn't mean literally a child. But what is it about children? Children lack discernment, don't they? They don't see the way things really are. He's speaking about someone who lacks wisdom, lacks discernment, lacks insight. They may be very clever. They may have lots of knowledge. But knowing lots of things is not the same as wisdom, is it? It's not the same as discernment. And if after May the 7th the Prime Minister is a child, Don't be surprised if those under him, far from serving the nation, serve themselves, says Solomon. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. They're just there to serve themselves. They don't feast at the proper time. They're just looking after number one. So pray whoever's elected is fit to lead, verse 17. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles. In the sense there is someone who is wise, discerning, trained for high office, a servant king. And of course, if you have such a leader, then no surprise if those who are under the leader, because he will choose the right people, they will serve the country and not themselves, verse 17. The princes will feast at the proper time. Nothing wrong with feasting, provided it's the proper time for strength. That's why they're doing it, and not for drunkenness. So come May the 8th, we don't want a child. We want someone who's discerning, who understands, who sees into things, who's wise. And if we get a child, then the country will fall into further decay and before it collapses altogether. Look at verse 18. Because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. If you have a child who leads, then those who are under him, you've got the wrong people there, and the whole thing, the whole house, eventually falls and collapses. Maybe the UK will break up. And of course, what's true of the nation is true of any institution. Schools, hospitals, Ofsted, business, the military. So Solomon, leadership matters. Character matters. Morality matters. What we need is wisdom, discernment, not just cleverness and giftedness and knowledge. Leadership matters. Verse 19, a feast is made for laughter and wine makes merry, but money answers everything. What do you think Solomon's getting at there? Well, if you're still talking about rulers, then if the rulers are in it for themselves, if they're feasting and drinking, or maybe they're putting in false receipts, or flipping their second homes, or having duck houses built and their moats cleared and false accounting and MPs' expenses. And says Solomon, remember, you, the taxpayer, will pick up the bill for all their extravagance, but money answers everything. How many leaders have bled their country? His country's dry. But says Solomon, there you are. See, it's insightful, isn't it? It's a man who's thought about life, watched life, weighed things up. It's very insightful. And if you don't get who you voted for on May the 7th, then says Solomon, well, you'll just have to make do. And so to point number 6, which we'll call grumpy old men and women. You see, as you get older, you realize the world is not going to change. As death gets nearer, you realize as you look back, your life has just been one long frustration. Your life has been filled with disappointment. It's not turned out as you wanted it to turn out. And as you look back and as you get older, what happens? You become a grumpy old man. What gets you going? Maybe it's too many road signs, or rude drivers, or people are always on their phone. Nothing's happening, but they're somehow... Or maybe some bit of new tech that just meddles in your life and makes your life more miserable. Or cold callers, or you're trying to ring someone and you get put on hold, and after 1 minute you think, I can't take this any longer. And that's before we get on to the really serious things. What winds you up? Why do we get wound up? It's because the world is not what we want it to be, is it? It's because my life is so full of frustrations. It never works. It never turns out the way I want it to be. It always goes wrong. Don't get me started. Master Solomon, before you get started, you better take care. Verse 20, do not curse the king, even in your thought. Do not curse the rich, even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter. Just be careful what you say. Don't put it on Twitter. Just be careful in case you're summoned before the king or before your boss. And you think, well, how do they find out? And they'll say, little bird told me. So however frustrating things get,
says Solomon, you just have to keep your mouth shut. You just have to keep silent about it. Can't be grumpy, can you? You just have to make do. So sit down, calm down, put the kettle on, take a deep breath and relax. We've got to the end of chapter 10. My friend, making the best of it. On my mantelpiece is a black and white photograph from 1953. It's of a couple on their wedding day. And they're young, handsome, happy. They have their whole life before them. And I know something of their story because they're my parents. But their story is our story. Flies in the ointment. Bad decisions as well as good. Healing words and words that made things so much worse. And a world sometimes where things are just standing on their head. My father was in the film business. One of his films was the Oscar winner Chariots of Fire. But as he worked on the film for his company, it was the biggest film his company had ever had. His superiors didn't make his life easy at all. They made it much harder because they didn't understand. It was beyond their area of competence. But then when the film was such a success, it was those who made his life so difficult, they were the ones basking in the applause. I've seen servants on horses and princes walk on the ground like servants. A life of hurts and frustrations and letdowns. A life of being stuck with fools and being foolish. And at times nothing worked. The world wasn't as they wanted it to be. But they just had to live each day. They just had to make do before death swept them away. Life, says Solomon, is one long letdown. And even, my friend, even if you have a perfect day, there's still a fly in the ointment. Why? Well, it's the knowledge, isn't it? I can never recreate this moment again. You ever felt that? You have a perfect day. Everything's right. Everything's wonderful. And yet even then, there's that thought in the back of my mind. I can never recreate this. When this day goes, it will be gone forever. And all I will have is the memory. I wanted to hold on to it. I wanted to keep it. I wanted to live this day forever. But I can't. It's gone. The perfect moment never lasts. And what are we left with? We're left with having to make do. And so as we hang on in quiet desperation, waiting for something to turn up, waiting for something to change, you see what Solomon's doing? If we say God is unknowable, and death is the end, and what is in between is our lives, then says Solomon, if that's the case, then you'll just have to make do. You'll have to make do with your short, frustrating, disappointing life. You'll have to put up with it. You have to make the best of it. And everything in us cries out and says, but I can't live like that. I don't want to live like that. I don't want to make the best of a miserable life. Well, says Solomon, maybe then it's because you are building on the wrong foundation. Maybe God is knowable. And you've crossed him out. Maybe there is life beyond the grave. Maybe there is a better answer than making do. And praise God there is. 1,000 years after Solomon wrote these words, there came one wiser than Solomon, one greater than Solomon. Who? The all-wise God himself. The God who came into this world. The God who was made man, made a man, a particular man, to live in the grit and the grime of this world. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and Jesus is his name. And when he came into this world, the world really was turned on his head. I have seen servants on horses while princes walk on the ground like servants. This is the God who in Christ gave up everything to put everything right. The God who got down his hands and knees to get his hands wet and dirty, washing the feet of others. The God who emptied himself, not of his godness, but of all his privileges and all that he had as the Lord of glory. He emptied himself and did it to rescue his enemies. The God who stepped down in this frustrating, broken, lost world, and not to condemn, not to stand on the sidelines. He came into this world to save. When love came down and made his home with men, the hopeless found a hope, the sinner found a friend. Not to the powerful, but to the poor he came, those who have to make do. And humble, hungry hearts were satisfied again. The humble God, the servant king, when love came down. And the world was never more turned on its head than when they nailed the Lord of glory to a cross. I'm the fool. I'm the fool who's wronged God, who's walked out on God. I'm the one who deserves to be punished. But it was he, the innocent, who took the blame. And his identification with a world of fools was total. The sins of countless people who've offended God were put to his account. So the punishment they deserve fell upon him. And he did it. He did it to bring us back to God. Because there is a God, and a God who can be known. And he did it to save us from the death that lies beyond the grave. Because the wages of sin is death. There is a second death, the everlasting fires of hell. And he did it so that I wouldn't have to make do. That hymn goes on, doesn't it? When every unclean thought and every sinful deed was scourged upon his back and hammered through his feet, the innocent is cursed, the guilty are released, the punishment of God on God has brought me peace. Come lay your heavy load down at the Master's feet. Your shame will be removed. Your joy will be complete. That's why it says, what hope? Making do, you see, is a life without hope, isn't it? It's a life without a future. It's a life without anything. I'm just making do, waiting for my turn to die. What hope, what help, what love. And in the gospel, it's here tonight. Because every time this gospel is preached, Christ is present, opening his arms wide. So hear his voice tonight. To a weary, disappointed world, filled with people making do, listen to the voice of Jesus. Listen to what he says. Come to me, all of you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Do you see the picture? When I was in Sri Lanka, I saw two oxen pulling this massive cart with a great load on it. The strain was enormous, and as they were pulling it, one stumbled. But it didn't fall. It didn't fall because it was yoked to the other ox, and the other took the strain. You see what Jesus is saying? He's saying, my friend, the reason you're frustrated and disappointed and hanging on in maybe quiet desperation is because you're going your own way and your own way is the wrong way. And what makes it worse is that you're doubly loaded by your sin, by your guilt, by your shame. And you know exactly what he means. We all have a personal history that we carry around with us. And so Jesus says tonight, stop going your way and come to me. Stop making do and start to learn from me. And put your neck under my yoke. Let me take that load that's crushing you, that's breaking you. And don't shrink from what I say, says Jesus. You've been conditioned too long to think that if you go that way, it's only going to be trouble and make things worse. It's not what you fear it is. It's a yoke that's lined with love. And as you come to me, says Jesus, you'll find that the touching point is my gentleness. For I am gentle and lowly in heart. Says Jesus, come to me. Walk with me. Walk beside me. Take my yoke upon you. Surrender to me. And as you do, you will find rest for your soul. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Come crucify your pride and enter as a child. For those who bow down low, he'll lift up to his side.